Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hustler Turf Equipment, most complete lineup of residential and commercial zero-turn lawnmowers in America. Over 1,000 dealers nationwide. Go to HustlerTurf.com. HustlerTurf.com. They know their mowers. Okay, so we get lucky sometimes. Chris Mannix, been covering in the NBA for a long time. He is texting Danny Ainge last night during the game. And Chris Mannix, NBA guy, is joining us live. Okay, so you're one of the guys that was all over this morning. So let's start with this. Danny Ainge is a very young 62. I reject the idea that Boston was a failure. That's all over Twitter this morning. I think he won a lot of games and made a lot of big trades. And sometimes it's bad breaks. Like in Gordon Hayward's case, it's literally a bad break. What is next, Chris, for Danny Ainge in your opinion? What do you know?
Well, I don't believe that Danny is going to be retiring, even though the Celtics framed it that way in their announcement of his exit. I still think there is a fire in his belly to run an NBA team, and I think he'll be back in the league sooner rather than later. The team I'm monitoring the most closely on that end is the Utah Jazz. I mean, Danny was a star at BYU. He has property in that area. And there's a connection there. And he's got, because of that new owner of the Jazz, Ryan Smith, who has a strong relationship with Danny Ainge. Now, the Jazz don't have a front office opening right now. Dennis Lindsay, who is one of the best top executives in all of basketball, he is still there. Justin Zanuck, a very well-respected GM, works underneath him as his number two. So they're solid right now at the moment. But if something happens where a job opens up in Utah, I fully expect Danny Ainge to be involved in that organization.
Okay, I'll throw my theory at you on Brad Stevens, and you can puncture it all you'd like, Chris. So, listen, coaching, he was a great college coach. He was a very successful NBA coach. But sometimes, you know, a lot of colleges have come after Brad Stevens. He could write the check. And I think Brad looked at it. He's a smart guy and thought, all right, I don't want to go back to college coaching. I can make a lot of money. I'm not sure I'm enjoying all the NBA coaching. And the Celtics had to make a choice because they didn't want to lose his brain power in the building because he's super bright. So, you know, I mean, I don't think the Celtics hate Danny Ainge. I just think we're going to lose Brad Stevens here. That's my theory on what happened. Tell me why Brad Stevens is moving upstairs.
Well, I don't think that Brad would be going anywhere as the head coach if this opportunity didn't present itself. He very recently signed a long-term contract to be the coach. So I would expect he would be there. I actually asked Brad this during the press conference this afternoon. Would he have been happy staying on the job? And for whatever it's worth, he said he would have. He said he loves the organization. He would continue to do whatever it is that he wanted to do. But I don't think there's any question, Colin, that this job opening, Brad Stevens was eager to jump into it. He's been the head coach of this team for 8 years now. And the last three have been very stressful. I mean, 2018-19 was a debacle. It was the Kyrie Irving year. It was Gordon Hayward trying to come back year. It was a messy situation that ended with this team getting knocked off in the second round of the playoffs. Last season was better, but the pandemic impacted it. They finished the season in the bubble. So that was stressful. This season, even more stress, COVID-19, the issues that affected the season, not the same type of chemistry with that locker room, and it ends in the first round of the playoffs. So I would say I don't think Brad was looking for a way out, but when this opportunity presented, I think he aggressively put his name forward as a candidate to fill that opening.
So the next Celtics coach, I heard stuff, you know, people were saying Coach K, and I just don't buy it. I think Coach K is more consultant maybe than he would be coach. I mean, is there a front runner for this gig?
Well, I think that, well, I know over the next few days, they're going to interview internal candidates. They've got some strong ones on Brad's staff. Jay Larinaga has been interviewed for head coaching opportunities before. Scott Morrison is an excellent young coaching candidate. Jerome Allen has been a head coach in the college ranks, but then they're going to spread out and look across the basketball landscape. And I do believe that's where they're most likely to land. Now, one of the names I've heard is Ime Udoka, an assistant coach with the Brooklyn Nets. He has been a coach on the rise from his days in San Antonio, in Philadelphia, and now in Brooklyn, one of the top assistants on Steve Nash's staff with the Nets. That's someone I think will get strong consideration, but they will, I believe, cast a reasonably wide net early on in this process as Brad goes through something he's never gone through before. He's never been the man in charge of hiring a head coach. So I would expect this to be something of a drawn-out process in the coming weeks.
By the way, a couple of non-Celtic topics. Fan behavior in the NBA. Listen, we know the proximity fans to players in pro basketball is really close. And I said this yesterday. I've been watching this happen for 5 or 6 or 7 years, where these billionaire owners, to squeeze another nickel out of their arena, have moved the media upstairs. Let's get more people on the court, more people around the tunnel. And I think pandemic, masks, everybody's pent up. There's a lot of anxiety. And it's just kind of, we're seeing this with airlines, bad behavior. We're seeing it. But some of this to me is, could you give the players a break when they walk to the tunnel? Could they have, I mean, if you can high five an athlete walking to a tunnel, that's to me, I just don't think that's appropriate. There's another way to make money. How much of this is on owners, the league? Who's responsible for this? I mean, why is it so bad in the NBA?
Look, I think it's a good point that, you know, players or fans are on top of players in ways they aren't in other sports. I mean, I can tell you firsthand the number of media seats I've lost that have been close to the floor because owners have wanted to put paying customers in that area and make money off them. This run of incidents involving fans has definitely given the NBA cause for reconsideration about some things. Now, right now, what they've settled on is enhanced security at games, more visible presences when it comes to security guards at games. If that doesn't work, the league might have to take extra steps. Maybe barriers might wind up having to be involved. Seats may have to be moved. But right now, I don't think the NBA is at that point. They're hoping what you're saying is true, that the way that this last year and a half has gone, pent up everything, that when things get back to more normal, you won't see as many incidents. One thing I think that needs to happen, though, is that they need to work hand in hand with law enforcement to make sure there is real tangible punishment when something like this happens. I mean, banning a fan for life makes a nice headline in a press release, but it doesn't really have any teeth. Like, there aren't faces on milk cartons at NBA arenas preventing guys or women from coming into the arena. I think there needs to be legal ramifications. Now, the guy that got kid that got arrested in Boston was charged with a felony. That, to me, is a little bit over the top for the incident that occurred. But I think there's going to be something that comes with real penalties, whether it's community service, a substantial fine, because no matter how drunk you are, Colin, if you are of the understanding that you are going to be dinged $50,000 or have to do 100 hours of community service, you are going to rethink throwing that water bottle or running onto the court. Right now, those penalties don't really exist, at least not in the legal process. And that's something I'd like to see the NBA work more with law enforcement in trying to make sure stuff like that happens.
Chris, finally, Joey and I were talking about this last year, is load management is not a great look for the league. I grew up in a small town. I went to one Sonics game every year. That's what we could afford. It was a 3-hour drive after school to get there. So if I'd have gone as a kid to a Sonics game and Gus Williams and DJ and Freddie Brown wouldn't have played, you know, that's a crushing moment for a little kid. I don't like load management. So I think the league, when the Clippers lost last year, Price sat there and thought, good, chemistry matters, play. I look at the Brooklyn team this year and I think to myself, okay, they want them in the finals, but if Brooklyn wins, KD, Harden left the Rockets, Kyrie, boy, the messaging, Chris, is, hey, guys, go join up. You don't even have to play 45 games. Just go join forces. And I know they wouldn't say it publicly. Couldn't I? Privately. Doesn't it hurt the league a little if Brooklyn just storms through this whole playoff and wins the championship?
Yeah, because teams that are put together, even for a full season, don't have championship level success. Even the Heat didn't win a championship in their first season with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch together as a trio. Now, I don't know that it would substantially change how NBA teams operate. I mean, the Raptors already kind of set the mold for what they did in 2018-19, where Kawhi was on a very strict load management schedule. And that's the kind of blueprint I think you're going to see teams follow moving forward. It's hard to kind of follow the Nets blueprint, because if they win the whole thing, it's going to be because they assembled three of the best scorers, as Kyrie Irving said, in NBA history. Three guys that are just straight assassins in the fourth quarter. If you can do that, then sure, then maybe you can follow the blueprint that the Nets do. But everything I hear from the Nets organization is that, man, they wish they had more time with these guys out there on the floor. If they get beat by Milwaukee in the second round, I guarantee you it's going to be blamed in some way, shape, or form on the fact that these guys did not have the type of chemistry that they would have if they had played a whole season together.
Chris Mannix, great stuff. NBA writer, Sports Illustrated. You know I love talking to you, man. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Yeah, very, very well connected.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Want a gift for Dad? Give him something that makes him comfortable. Tommy John underwear. 20% off your first order. Go to TommyJohn.com/herd. TommyJohn.com/herd. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is The Herd Line News.
Well, big news today. Mike Krzyzewski is reportedly going to retire after the 2021-2022 season, which will be his 41st as head coach at Duke, which is remarkable. He's the winningest coach in Division I men's basketball history and has led the Blue Devils to 5 NCAA championships, 15 ACC tournament titles, and 12 Final Four appearances, most wins ever with 1,170. And assistant head coach John Shire is reportedly expected to take over as the next head coach in 2022. He's came back, obviously, this is his alma mater. He's served as an assistant for a long time and was moved up to assistant head coach and is a big time recruiter. So he's a big reputation at Duke for recruiting there. So
can I give you my Mike Krzyzewski story?
Yes.
So it was the Denver Final Four, and I covered UNLV locally in Las Vegas for KVBC. So Georgia Tech made it. They had Dennis Scott on the team, Kenny Anderson. Duke made it. UNLV won the title in Denver. They were there. So it's a press conference the day before, and Bobby Hurley, the great player, was sick. And you didn't have all the blogs and stuff. It was like 30 years ago. And so I'm a young Cub reporter, and I say, Coach K, I was way in the back, could you be more specific on Bobby Hurley and what he's dealing with? And this bite went national. And Coach Krzyzewski went, Bobby Hurley has diarrhea. That was the bite.
Oh, my God.
And he just kind of smiled, and everybody just cringed and looked at me like, did you have to ask that question?
Like Colin.
So that's my Mike Krzyzewski story.
That's great. You have to put him.
Oh, he's the best college basketball.
The best college. I mean, but you're talking about best John, basketball coaches ever.
Well, I mean, John Wooden and Mike Krzyzewski.
I mean, when you think of the best basketball coaches ever, NBA and college, you think
well,
of
yeah,
K.
I mean, how many could thread the needle of college and pro? We've seen all these college guys go pro, even great college coaches like Jerry Tarkanian, Lon Kruger, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah, to have the legacy he has with USA basketball is, I mean, and there's just the respect when you hear even Chris Bosh talk about him and other pros. He's remarkable. He's
yeah,
had an unbelievable career.
It all starts with his IQ.
Yeah.
He's really, really bright, and bright people, this is why he works with NBA players and college. He can read the temperature of the room.
I also like that it's not an immediate retirement. Like, he's going to have another season.
Yes,
he's going to
yeah.
be able to groom Shire if that does end up being the next guy up, which, look, you never want to be the guy who's replacing
no kidding.
The legend, but Coach K's, that's a next level of expectations, but he has been there and been grooming for this situation, so at least there's that, but just an incredible career. And now we get to have the proper send-off for Coach K, right? There'll be fans back, He'll get to have his, you know, his tour, and like that's nice as well, knowing that, yeah, you know, we'll get one more year with him. So the Nets wrapped up their first round series with the Celtics in a 123-109 game five win last night.
Bizarrely close.
It was close.
Why was it close late in the third?
Well, I mean, if I remember correctly, this was like a 12-point spread. Remember, because we talked about it at the end of the game. I mean, end of the show yesterday. And I was like, I think the Celtics are going to put up a little bit more of a fight.
Yeah, you did.
You know, in an elimination game.
They did.
And they did. The big three put up 84 points, though. So Harden had his first postseason triple-double in Brooklyn. So now they take on the Bucks. In conference semifinals.
Cannot wait. This is going to be one of the best Eastern Conference series since the... I don't even know when. This
what
is the
best. Say Milwaukee fear the deer.
I have Milwaukee winning that in six games.
I have the Nets winning the final, so I have them winning this series. But I do think that this will be a long series.
Yes.
It begins Saturday in Brooklyn. The Nets are favored by 4 in game one, according to Fox Bet.
And I'll take Milwaukee.
And -225 to win the series. I don't, honestly, I don't care who wins. I just want to see a long series.
Oh, you'll get it.
I want to see a long series. Kevin Durant is averaging 32 points in the first round. Kyrie, 24. James Harden, 27.8. Giannis, 23 points. Chris Middleton, 21.5 points. And Drew Holiday is adding 15 points. So this is a great matchup. We know what Giannis has done to Brooklyn during the regular season. I don't put too much into performances during the regular season. I do think you can take a, you know, some matchup things from it, but Harden wasn't there. I do think it's going to be very competitive, and you know, the playoffs have been incredible even in the non-competitive series. So we're finally getting a great matchup. And now with Embiid's injury, this is really, really going to be an interesting series. So Jimmy Butler still has 2 years left on his current deal with the Heat, but he is eligible for an extension with the team this offseason. He is reportedly expected to seek a maximum 4-year extension worth $181 million. This extension would align with the one Bam signed last year, keeping both in Miami through the 2025-26 season.
I would rather give Butler that than Bam that. Because I think Butler's a star. I think Bam averages 15 a game against great players.
Well, Bam's already signed.
I know. That's
so, yeah. Now, they do have a lot of free agents this season. Goran Dragic is a team option. Iguodala has a team option. Duncan Robinson is restricted free agent. So is Kendrick Nunn. Oladipo was supposed to be a major piece to this, but obviously had a major injury. So who knows if they're going to try and keep him there. What the market's going to be for him. Ariza, obviously UD, we'll see if he's there another year, and Dwayne Dedman. Disappointing season for the Heat, but Jimmy is the guy there. So
he's the foundation.
I expect this deal to get done. You can think of whatever you want, and obviously the conversation about Harden possibly going there before he signed with Brooklyn, I think that was overblown. I don't know if that was ever really something that they pursued. Or how would that even have worked? Like, I think where Harden ended up actually was the right place. Like, how would he have done in Miami through all of this? Like, who knows? So, and then they're like, what, that raises the expectations if Harden is there, and now Harden has to be the guy again.
But it's different. Here's my problem with Miami. They're paying Bam like a 2, and I think Bam's a 3.
Oh, Harden would, yeah, they need another star.
Yeah, I mean, if you have Harden as a 1, Butler as a 2, and Bam as a 3, that's a championship team. I don't think Bam as a 2. That's my Chris Middleton thing.
Yes.
Chris Middleton's paid like a 2. He's really a 3. And by the way, this year he is a 3, and Milwaukee's better.
Yeah. No, he just, I think they just added some significant pieces. Like, I think they took a little pressure off of him. He still is
the
2. But Drew and PJ have taken some pressure off of Chris Middleton. So I still think he is
well, do
the
you
2,
like
but
Drew,
their 3s are stronger.
Who do you like, Drew or Chris Middleton, if you had to pick a player?
I mean, Chris provides more scoring.
Yeah,
Drew,
but I...
Like, Drew is I think a... he's just a different piece. Like, I don't know that. I think it depends on how you construct the team.
Right.
Like, Drew and PJ have added an element of defense and
toughness,
and obviously additional scoring. But Chris not having to be that guy when Giannis isn't there, that they don't have to do that anymore. Now they can. It's a more balanced team overall.
Yeah, I think it can win different ways. They
yes.
can be finesse and they can be physical. And last year, Milwaukee couldn't be physical. So this is, yeah. Well, good luck, Miami. They got a lot of money and 2 dudes. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Yeah, like whenever I criticize Bam, it's like, well, I'm not saying Bam's not great. He's a great player. But he's a, to me, he's a three. Well, he averages 19 a game. He averages about 14 to 15 when he faces a Giannis and Embiid. Like, when he faces Anthony Day, a good player, he's a 15-point-a-game guy. That's what he is. So he's a three. By the way, you know, a three is Klay Thompson in Golden State during their run. Like, threes can be all-stars. They are on championship teams. When you're three, you know, when you had Kareem, Magic, and Worthy, and Worthy's your three, when you had Bird, McHale, and Parrish, Parrish is a nine-time All-Star, he's your third-best player. Hell, Dennis Johnson could be your fourth-best player. That's when you win championships. You know, when Michael Jordan's your one, Pippen's your two, and you forget, Tony Kukoc was the best European player in the world, and Rodman is a Hall of Fame-level player. That was your four. So it's nothing against Bam, but I think is if he's your two and you're paying him as a two, you're going to ultimately not be able to get another guy. And that's why Drew Holiday, to me, is the two with Milwaukee. Middleton is a three. Oh, that's a championship team. That, to me, is a championship team in Milwaukee. Anyway, good argument to have. Coming up, graduations are happening all over America. Graduations and you know, yearbook season. So we thought we'd hand out our superlatives. Most likely to succeed in the NBA. Most popular, that's coming up. Most of you know, I try to work out, try to eat right. Not perfect. Certainly last night, I had a second small cocktail last night. Last night was a two-cocktail night. By the way, watered down, mostly ice, but nonetheless.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
Limited time only. Memorial Day sale, 15% off. Go to Casper.com/promo. They're putting their Casper cooling collection in that Memorial Day sale. They've never done that before, Casper. So yesterday we talked about this, Joy, is that why is it that Russell Wilson pushed back on management in Seattle and they folded? Aaron has pushed back for 3 years and Green Bay won't listen to him and won't fold. Why is that? I mean, Aaron is more decorated, three-time MVP, national commercials. Why is that? Seattle folded immediately. 3 years, Aaron's been battling the front office. They will not budge. Why? Because I think Russell Wilson is beloved in Seattle, and the images, he's a businessman, and he's a good guy. The images that Russell Wilson sends to the Seattle public, I'm at children's hospitals, I care about the kids, I care about the community, and also constant workout videos. Aaron's imagery is often, hey, I'm with this hipster, I'm with this actress, I'm in Hawaii, ukulele, no OTAs. And I think Aaron has misjudged his popularity in Green Bay. People love the Packers more than Aaron. They realize Aaron's not one of them. So I said this yesterday, it was my opening rant, that Russell has crafted and molded, for the cynical, you could say it's just, you know, he's doing this to manipulate. But what do you know today? Once again, Russell Wilson's Twitter account today, for our radio audience, it's him working his arse off, looking completely jacked, and the quotes are, ain't nothing I want more. He is all football. He's got his Hawks helmet on. He is totally committed to the franchise. So when he pushes back, the Seattle media, the Seattle fans, go on protective mode. They protect their guy. They go to radio shows, letter to the editor. They go after the Seahawks. You take care of Russell. Russell's our guy. He cares about our kids. He cares about our hospitals. He cares about our fans. He cares about... Wait, Russell sells, it's all beyond me. It's all about us. It's us. Go Hawks. Aaron sells... Got a place in Malibu hosting Jeopardy. I'm kind of my own spirit. I'm not really you. You're awesome. I go Packer Nation. Then nobody really buys it. I'm not banging on Aaron. I'm telling you, this is the imagery. These are the images. This is the messaging that the two quarterbacks. Why did Seattle fold with Russell? Why does Green Bay refuse to? Because Green Bay is not getting a lot of pushback from their fans. Leroy Butler, former Packer great, now a popular radio host in Milwaukee, The Big Show Afternoons, came on this show and said, people are like, see, Aaron, you're abandoning the franchise. This is the Midwest. They wear cheese hats. They're farmers. You don't abandon them. Don't hang out with celebrity cool people. That's not connecting. Go back to Russell Wilson's Twitter account today. Nothing I want more. It's about winning and us. It matters. That stuff just, we talked about it yesterday and it showed up today. Are you ready to smell like a gentleman? Russell Wilson is a gentleman. Discover Cremo products designed with good, uncommon scents. Body wash, hair gel, it's all great. Amazon has it, cremocompany.com. Am I nuts on that?
No. I mean, everything is about messaging, as we know. I just think Aaron is, he's a different guy. He does things his own way, and he's very unapologetic about it. And
people want to feel included.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, and sometimes it's hard for us because we are, I don't disagree with how this is all playing out. Like, I agree. That's why that happened with Russell Wilson. Sometimes it's hard for us to see how it's all going to play out in the moment. Like, it might take a few years to see what the strategy is for both the Packers and for Aaron Rodgers.
But there's a story in The Athletic. They will only trade Aaron, the story says, if they think he will never play for the Packers again.
Yeah, and I think that's the right strategy for the Packers.
But they don't believe it. That's why they keep releasing and leaking the story. We're not budging.
Yeah, well, I mean, he hasn't said it. Once he comes out and says, I'm not doing it anymore, then there's a line in the sand. There isn't a line in the sand yet. Because that's a $35 million line in the sand.
Look at that Russell Wilson. I'm sorry for the radio audience, but just this is what Russell Wilson sells to the Pacific Northwest, and this is why the franchise folded when he finally came out and said, man, I want to be here, but I need help. I mean, it was full support from Hawk Nation. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Sir Herb.